This morning we get to take a moment to connect it once again with our Storytellers series. Each month in the garage, we bring in people from the community, sometimes within the congregation itself, to share with us stories that can expand our understanding of the world. Be that someone who's lived in this neighborhood for 8 decades, someone who has walked from here to D.C. for justice, or a mother-daughter team who has just returned from a journey around the world together. As it may be. Angelina and Mona are going to be with us on Wednesday in the garage to share a bit of their story. And we wanted to give you a little preview and interest you enough to make sure that you will create some time to join us this week as we gather together. So I wonder, as we're chatting this morning, ladies, if you would sort of just set the scene for us. What did you just do and return from?
We returned from a 180-day trip around the world, and we took planes, trains, buses, cars, boats, and we walked a little bit too.
And you did that together, just the two of you, the entire time, and you're still talking. Marvelous. I know. So, Mona, what inspired you to take this trip and to share it with your daughter the way you did?
Well, I would say teaching 23 years of elementary PE and retiring on June 1st was the first inspiration. My parents also went around the world in the 80s when I was studying hard at CU. And mostly a book that I read in high school. I was a sailor because I grew up on the ocean in Northern California. A book called Dove, written by Robin Lee Graham, and he sailed around the world. And although we didn't sail around the world, that was one of my dreams. And so I was happy to be able to share it with my daughter, and she got to take some of eighth grade with me. So that was fun, too.
Now, while you were gone, you blogged, and you'll be sharing on Wednesday some of the different stories, experiences, photos. There'll be a chance for you both share with us and narrate some of your journey, and then for folks to just ask some questions, because I bet we'll be curious about things. But as you look back, in the midst of it, you're blogging, you're writing, you're talking about all these little moments. As you look back at the bigger picture, do you see any ways that you may have been changed by this trip?
I was changed by this trip because I got to see how people lived every single day. And I look at the world with a global perspective now, and I see things differently.
I feel like there's so many ways that I've grown and changed in my faith, because God is present everywhere and kept us safe on our journey, which was a big concern of my father's when I first told him that we were going to do this. I also feel like the world is a lot smaller than when we left. We woke up in France, and we were home here back in Denver 17 hours later. And so I said to Angelina, things don't seem as far away as they did before. But also, I feel like I gained a heightened sensitivity to different peoples and their way of living, their history, their culture, and just appreciating our diversity and differences and honoring all the diversity in the world. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for you'll be with us on Wednesday at 7 in the garage. We invite you to come and hear the stories and see the pictures, but also for taking a moment to share with us this morning to remind us of where you've been and how grateful we are that you're home. Very much so. Thank you, ladies. So when I was a kid, my friends and I loved to create superheroes. Meaning, as we ran around the neighborhood, we would invent our own characters with unique abilities and powers that we could then play. Rather than just being ones that existed, we wanted our own characters. And so we'd create them, but there was a catch. As we were in the midst of playing and being and doing, once someone named a superpower, no one else could use it. So when my buddy Steven said, "I can fly," it meant none of the rest of us could, and we all had to find different powers. This led to a lot of disagreements. I have no clue why we chose this rule, but we did. I think at one point I spent an entire afternoon sitting alone on my swing set because Andrew had picked mind control and I really wanted it. Here's why I bring this childhood memory up. I worry that moderate and progressive Christians are sitting on their metaphorical swing set because traditionalists have picked up the Bible, said it's theirs, and now we think we can't use it. It is far too easy to think that there is nothing for us when you look at the way scriptures have been used to marginalize and judge, enforce patriarchal, homophobic, dogmatic agendas on the world. It's far too easy to think there's nothing there for us. I mean, there are times I hear people pull verses out of this book, and the way they use them, someone get me a bucket, please. I'm just not having it. But here's the thing. We're not 8 years old, and this is not a zero-sum game. In fact, it's not a game at all. This is life, and these are God's words for God's people. What I hold in my hand is a collection of writings and stories that span human history. I mean, the Bible is an account of humanity's attempts to make sense of God, make sense of life, and that's why it's so hard to make sense of the Bible. Because those are big things, and this is a big collection of books. But making sense of the Bible is what we are going to undertake together. In worship through the sermons, in the weekly study offered at two different times, we are going to learn and reflect and grow in our relationship with the Scriptures. So that when someone else tries to claim them as their superpower, we can politely let them know we're not going home. You see, one of the first things we have to address when we approach the Scriptures is how we choose to read them. The most basic rift in the Christian world comes between people who say they read the Bible literally and those who seek to apply context to interpret it. Now, please note my phrasing, people who say they read it literally. One of my favorite biblical scholars points out that even fundamentalism follows a rule of interpretation. A simple and easy rule, in fact. The rule is that a text means whatever it means to somebody who's reading it right then. That's all reading the Bible literally is. That's not reading it literally. That's reading it selfishly. To believe the Bible can only mean what it means to you in that moment, reading it right now, is a selfish act. So instead of using scriptures to justify the sinful whim of the day, as it has been and still continues to be the case, the Bible has been used to justify all sorts of things. Slavery, sexism, ableism, heterosexism, racism. Basically, anytime you find a word with ism that marginalizes people, chances are someone has found a way to say, oh no, if you just read these words in this order, it means I'm right. So we need a different approach to making sense of this book, this collection of books. Because it doesn't even require a person taking things out of context for a level-headed, rational person to take issue with some of the stuff in here. I mean, if you're reading the Bible for yourself, you're going to find some things that are problematic and frustrating just upon first glance. Now, exactly where you open it will determine how bored you get before it angers you, but you see what I'm saying here. So instead of needing to get a bucket in response to the biblical approaches that make me ill, I'm inviting us to be proactive in getting out some buckets to sort the scriptures instead. You see, in his book on making sense of the Bible, Adam Hamilton, a Methodist colleague of mine, uses a simple method to describe how we can approach our scriptures. He identifies three buckets that scriptures can be organized into so that we might approach them and see them in new and different ways. You see, there's the first bucket. Scriptures that express God's heart, character, and timeless will for humanity. That's some good stuff right there. The timeless will of God expressed in our scriptures. Then there's the second bucket. Scriptures that expressed God's will in a particular time, but are no longer binding. And then a third bucket. Scriptures that never fully express the character or will of God. That really say more about the people who wrote them and decided to put them in than anything about God. So I want us to think about these three buckets as a way to approach and engage and make sense of the Scripture. Now, bucket one, this divine, timeless will of God. Bucket one scriptures include passages like the Great Commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. as we find it in Deuteronomy or the Gospels, as Jesus quotes it once again. Scriptures in bucket one include passages like, do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. Thank you, Micah. And do unto others as you would have them do unto you, as Matthew tells us Jesus said. In fact, appreciatively, most of the Bible fits into bucket one. Most of it does. Scriptures that truly capture God's heart and character and timeless will of God. Now, bucket two scriptures are these scriptures that expressed God's will for God's people at a specific time and circumstances, right, for then, but they don't express a timeless will of God. So to give you some examples here, these would include the commandment that all men be circumcised. Commands regarding animal sacrifices, where to place them on the altar, and what to do with the meat after we finish the sacrifice. Obviously, you've seen our altar. We don't do that anymore. But there's hundreds of passages that fill the law. The law would be the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, often referred to as the Old Testament. Tons and tons of things that were applicable and specific to a time and moment. But here's the interesting thing. Recognizing they were written for a time and a moment and no longer bind us as people is a biblical idea. You see, the apostles in Acts 15, they sat down and looked at the scriptures and determined that most of the laws that appeared were no longer binding upon Christian people. So to create these buckets and say there are things that are timeless and there are some things that we don't need to try to apply to every day anymore is actually a biblical practice. We have that permission and space given to us by the scriptures themselves. Now the idea of a third bucket, passages that never reflected God's heart and will, is disconcerting to some. Because it challenges deeply held beliefs about how God has spoken and continues to speak through biblical authors. There are some folks who just cannot believe that's a possibility. But I would believe that such a bucket is necessary for sorting and bringing more meaning to our scriptures. Because there are things I encounter in the Bible that I cannot say ever were a part of who or what God is. Leviticus 21:9 requires that if the daughter of a priest becomes a prostitute, she be burned to death. Folks, that's not the God I know. Exodus 21:20 and 21. God permits slave owners to beat their slaves with rods, provided the slave doesn't die within the first 48 hours after the beating. Folks, that is not God. That is not the God I know. And so, I appreciate this third bucket. See, we can't ignore that these verses are in our scriptures. To do so is inappropriate. But to then say, these verses are inappropriate, that's where we find ourselves engaging and beginning to make sense of these scriptures. Even with all sorts of mental gymnastics and historical filters, there are certain things the God I know would never be okay with. Wasn't then, isn't now. So they go into the third bucket. In our conversations in the weeks to come, conversations we will have in worship and in our book study. And by the way, if you need over coffee, this is big stuff. And sometimes it takes a one-on-one conversation, and I would be glad to share these conversations with you. And in these conversations, we will be striving for two main things. First, I want you to come to know some of the essential scriptures that truly express God's heart and character and timeless will for humanity. I want you to know them. I want you carrying bucket one around with you all the time so that when the world is challenging or you encounter a person who is in pain, there are things you can turn to that equip you and support you and remind you of a loving, compassionate God. Secondly, I want you to hear and see examples of the context and history that allow us to take the Bible seriously, but not literally. I was at Home Depot, and they sell this cool little thing. They've got those bright orange 5-gallon buckets, right? But then they have this thing. It's like a little skirt that goes on top that drapes around the bucket so you can put all your tools in the top of the bucket and then store stuff in. So that as you carry this bucket around, you have the tools you need to do work. And I think of bucket two this way, right? The context, the history, the learning we can do so that when we see scriptures, we can work on them and say, this is what this is. Bucket two for me is really about empowering one another, that we might engage the scriptures in an important way. That's what we want to do, is be equipped so that making sense of the Bible might empower us. You know, back when I was playing Heroes with my friends, we thought the ability to control the weather or be invisible were pretty impressive powers. And I would say I would still love to experience that in real life. But honestly, as I have cared for people in moments of need, as I have sat over coffee and talked about life, as we as a congregation have sought to build a home where all belong, I've encountered true power. And it's power that comes from knowing and living out God's love. You see, when you can confront self-doubt and self-hatred with affirmations of sacred worth, that is a truly impressive power. So when I sit with someone and can remind them of the beautiful words of Psalm 139, "You, O Lord, have created my innermost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb, and I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made," the psalmist writes. For me, that is the timeless will of God and an expression of God's heart for each of us to know that you are a unique and beautiful gift to the world, designed by God to be exactly who you are. That is some powerful stuff we've got in bucket one right there. And we need to claim it. Or that tool bucket I need to carry around so that when someone is wrestling with their relationship with God after experiencing a divorce, and I can sit with them and articulate the biblical context of the time, how the biblical discussions of divorce were underpinned by cultural understandings of women as property, understandings we do not carry and are fighting against even still today. Understandings that were held by the original authors and audiences of the day that are no longer worthy of our consideration, which shift how we see the scriptures. That we can work through and name that our scriptures are not meant to make people feel less than or sinful for choosing to end a relationship that was not life-giving. To watch someone be able to set that burden and baggage down and see themselves as whole and holy once again is a powerful moment. There is great power in being able to claim and reclaim and use and hold our scriptures. And there's bucket three. Having permission, not that you need it from me, but just to be reminded that you have the blessing to outright eliminate unhealthy and ignorant passages of Scripture, to boldly say that is not God's love, acceptance, justice, and hope as I know it, and I will not be bound by such words. That is a powerful moment as well. To not allow broken relics of human error keeping us from life-giving, affirming messages of abundance that really permeate the majority of our scriptures. Why should we let those small moments ruin everything else? There is such power in making sense of our scriptures, because nothing should keep us from claiming them, claiming the Bible as a basis of loving, inclusive, world-changing faith. That's what we can do as people who claim the scriptures. So please join me as we reclaim the powerful words of life that are held in our scriptures. Amen.